The All Terrain Podcast is made possible by the synergistic procrastination fighting power of coffee and whiskey and the sustaining fortification of burritos. Learn more about coffee, whiskey, and burritos at a local business or food truck near you. If you want to help keep this podcast going, consider checking out our website for links and videos, as well as hats, stickers, and patches to affix to your head, gear, and bumpers. All right, friends, we're back for part two of the Plumas Backcountry Discovery Trail episode. If you haven't heard part one, you should definitely stop here and go back and listen to that one first. In this episode, we'll hear about some points of interest on the north end of the trail, including some good campsites, a discussion of the best time of year to run the trail, and places to go back to for more. Stay with us. So how was Rock Creek Campground? That's really close to Quincy. Was that the more populated?
You know, it was like a Monday night, so.
Not really.
Huh? Not really.
Nothing's going to be crowded then, that time of year.
Yeah, we had the place to ourselves. There was one other vehicle.
And then we had the random dude that came in at 9 o'clock at night. So Brent and I were still up, and the kids and dogs and spouses had gone to sleep, and we were sitting there, and this random dude drove up in a truck and gets out of his truck and comes up to our campsite and asks if he could walk through our campsite so he could go check his mining claim.
Oh.
So I don't know what you check at a mining claim at 9 at night, but he did. The trail goes out of the back of the campground, and he was back there for, it took him probably 30 minutes to get back there and come back through, and at some point he came back through and left. So just another weird thing that happened on the it's funny, the few people ran into were definitely strange.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So it got cold that night.
Yeah. I saw the pictures you guys were wearing your puffies.
Oh yeah. You know, we each brought our dogs, and the dog's bowl was frozen the next morning.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet Maggie wasn't super stoked on that.
Yeah, Maggie the Greyhound does not do cold well. So she's in a tent with us. She has a bed that I put out, and then I put a jacket on her, and then she lays down, and then I lay a blanket over her. And if she happens to get up at night and move her blanket, she'll wake me up to then put her blanket back on.
Right.
So, and then the next morning, she didn't want to get out of the tent.
Yeah,
we had all got up, made breakfast, the kids were out, and the only one still in the tent was Maggie the Greyhound.
That's funny. Okay, so the next section is East Quincy to Spanish Ranch.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Meadow Camp.
Meadow Camp.
We didn't stay there, but we, on the next leg, drove through there, and we admired it. And at that point, Meadow Camp's not too far off of off pavement, and we thought at some point in the future, maybe we'd bring the families back and camp there.
Nice. It's just... west of Quincy near Lowell Bader Park, County Park.
Yeah, so it's sort of a primitive type campground. No real facilities. So we just, along the way, we admired it and made a mental note of it and kept moving.
Cool. So what next? What is the landscape like that you're going through at this point? It's creepy, dense forest. Is it?
No,
the
dense stuff ended at Harrison Flat. After
okay.
that, things opened up. Then it was just, you know, the typical alpine Forest Service roads, you know, in the pine trees. So it was a lot of Forest Service road.
Yeah, yeah. The beauty of Meadow Camp was it was in a meadow, and a big clearing, if you will.
Right.
So yeah, elevation wise, it's not that high there.
No, I'm looking at the map. This map is not labeled with elevations, but can't be that high.
So then, at what point we actually kind of flip things around, because we end up not doing the last leg.
Well, you know, we left, departed Rock Creek, passed through Meadow Camp, popped into some pavement, and then across the pavement to another leg, which I guess is the next map.
The next map is right.
East Quincy to Spanish Ranch.
That's right. We drove to Spanish Ranch, and then ultimately our camping that was shown in the book was closed.
Oh, really?
Was that where we had the...
Well, we, again, had sort of earmarked a campground where the trail ends at Highway 70. And, you know, I think we should tell them about the butterfly.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Remember that?
Yeah. What section of trail was that?
It was... You know, it was partway through the next segment, place called Butterfly Valley. And I guess in the springtime, it's full of butterflies.
Full of butterflies. And they also have...
Oh, yeah, that's on the section 6.
They also have insect-eating plants there.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
So being that it was October, you know, it was a beautiful area. You know, there was no blooming happening, and I think the butterflies had moved on.
Right.
I think in springtime that'd be an interesting place to go back and visit.
That was one of the prettier places that was not like the other places. It wasn't just a pine forest. When you get down into that butterfly area, that's where we had lunch there, and there's a good hiking loop, at least one good hiking loop there. And it was a little more damp there and a little more vegetated than some of the other stuff we were on.
Cool. Yeah, that's close to Highway 70 on the Feather River.
Yeah. And by the way, that was a bypass trail leading to another 4x4 alternative route that we wanted to hit. That was our goal, to hit all the 4x4.
Right. It looks routes. Like that route splits.
It does. There. It does.
And so is the Butterfly Valley part of the 4x4 section?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
And we have to say, as far as being 4x4, we were highly disappointed. It wasn't.
Right.
We never found it.
There was no spotting.
No.
No rock stacking. No.
Yeah, I think again, that was a section where somebody with a Subaru could probably get through it.
I think the 4Runner still would have lifted a wheel, right? You think? At least one.
Yeah, it doesn't take much.
Three, a little tripod, the 4Runner. Yeah.
You know, the only thing, I mean, it was beautiful. It popped out along the, what is the river there? Feather River Canyon. And we were high up overlooking the Feather River Canyon. So the scenery was just awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, part of the drive from that that meadow where the butterflies are down was really, really cool.
Mm-hmm. And we passed through an old bridge.
Mm-hmm. I saw the pictures of that.
The tunnel. Yeah.
It's basically a tunnel. It was a short tunnel. But we had fun there taking some pictures and videos. And I mean, just gorgeous. After the bridge, I mean, we never found the 4x4 area and end up at the end of the route for the day on Highway 70 in a little little town there. It was interesting. Do you remember the name of that town, Sean?
I don't remember the name.
Twain.
Twain.
That's it, Twain.
And they had a lot of tchotchke there. They had a fake town built up that you could take pictures at. And there's normally a campground there, but we had missed the season on all the campgrounds. All the campgrounds were shuttered. So we couldn't find a good place to dry camp that we felt we were not going to be bothered. So at that point, we made a decision to kind of continue on.
That was the end of our official trail run.
Right.
When we popped out on the Highway
70. You came out of Twain?
Came out of Twain, and the trail does go on to Lake Almanor, but we decided that, I don't know, what did we decide? Mm. It was, 36 miles to, looks like Butte Lake?
It was already starting to get late. So
it was starting to get late, and our whole goal the whole trip was, you know, we're traveling with kids and specifically Emmett's 4 years old, and we wanted to have camp picked
right
and set up by dark.
Yeah, it's really nice to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And we did that. So when we popped out on the 70, it was about like, okay, you know, it's late in the afternoon. What do we do from here?
Because yeah, if we committed to going to continue to go towards Almanor, we didn't know where we were going to be camping at. So then at that point, we actually decided to go back to Meadow Camp.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
It was day four of our journey.
So did you loop back around on the highway?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we ended up looping around and going back to Meadow Camp. When we got there, it was basically full.
Filled up while we were gone.
On a Tuesday.
On a Tuesday.
There's only a couple spots. It's not a big camp.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think total there was probably 6 or 7 spots. And we could have got a spot right next to somebody else.
Right.
We opted out of that.
Right.
And they weren't very friendly. They didn't wave.
Yeah, they weren't it didn't look like a group.
Were you guys like driving all over their stuff?
No.
We drove over their hose and we crushed their bucket. No.
we just weren't feeling warm and fuzzy about it and we would have been squeezing in amongst right. them. So we decided to bail on that and go find our own spot.
Right.
And ultimately we did. We found a great spot. Again, another open, you know, open area, you know, in the sun.
Uh-huh. Very close to Meadow Camp. I mean, just
yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a block away, so to speak.
This is all national forest area where you can open camp just about anywhere you want.
Yeah.
Could you have fires at that point? Did you guys have fires?
Up until then, we had have fires every night.
Uh-huh.
But at this spot, we opted not to. I mean, it was basically a sort of a grassy flat right. area. And
it would have been real easy to ignite the grass, even though there was a really old fire ring. It was that dry cheatgrass right up to the ring.
So and did you get a permit? Did one of you guys pull a permit from the ranger station, or just overlook that?
I think we kind of overlooked that.
We overlooked it. We wanted to. Yeah. We were going to get it, but it was Saturday, and the Plumas County Plumas Forest Service
was
ranger station was closed on Saturday, which that's a big bummer.
Yeah. I know that the there were fire restrictions most of the summer.
Yeah.
Out there, so it's at least they were lifted
for that,
which is nice.
We played it safe there and opted not to. And ultimately, when it got cold, we ended up just going to bed.
And that was the coldest night.
Yeah.
That was definitely the coldest night. So I remember waking up the next morning. Again, all the dog waters are froze.
Yeah. Hmm.
In fact, your coffee pot was froze.
Right. I would, I have one of those percolators, and I'd fill it with water the night before and put the coffee in. That way I can just wake up and fire up the Coleman stove, and it was frozen.
Do you think that this is a good time of year to do it, or would you do it spring, sometime a little warmer? I mean, was it nice during the day at least?
Oh, yeah. It was absolutely gorgeous. Blue skies, never saw a cloud.
I would probably do it a little earlier in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
I think there would be some sections that would be really wet in the spring.
Yeah.
I think you'd be... there'd
it's
be
snowy,
some,
too, probably yeah, most years.
I think some of the higher stuff, you'd be dealing with some mud. Not that that's, you know, not fun and doable, but you're definitely... a week or two earlier or just better luck with the lows at night would have been nice.
Right.
We actually lucked out. I mean, the week prior, it stormed and snowed, and actually Sean was up in that area and got snowed on.
Yeah.
So it probably made that not super dusty.
Yeah. So we were in that window after the storm, and it was gorgeous. Beautiful during the day and then just cold overnight.
Cool. Well, so if you were to go back, if you go to back sections of this trail, what would be the top three for you, Sean, to go back and?
Well, definitely from Downeyville LaPorte.
Downeyville LaPorte.
That's a must. And then the part into East Quincy, going through the tunnel, that was really pretty. We didn't talk about, we went up through a big burn on the way home. After we after we left Meadow Camp on the way home, we decided to hit that section that we...
Oh, yeah, we did. We backtracked.
We backtracked. The section that we decided not to do because of the Jeep clunking, we figured we had the clunk fixed, and we actually did go up to... what was that peak? You guys got the map.
From Meadow Camp back to Quincy?
No, Meadow Camp...
it would be between Rock Creek Campground.
There's a big peak that overlooks Quincy that we, on the 4x4 alternate route that we bypassed earlier, we went up and did that and went back down.
Yeah. Was it Claremont?
Claremont, that's it.
Yeah. So that was
neat.
That was neat. That was it had just burned.
Huh.
Summer, fall.
Mm-hmm. And so, but the trail was a little more technical than everything but the Poker Flat.
I think that was one section I was worried about. It's described as like a steep, loose climb.
Yeah, I think Sean did it in two-wheel drive.
I did it in two-wheel drive,
so it wasn't, you know, a four-service.
That's a power wagon.
You know, interesting thing, you know, like I said, we were following the map and the signs. It's really well marked, but when the trail burns,
all the signs go melting. With it.
Oh, yeah.
So we had some trouble navigating the burn area.
So you say well marked, meaning the road numbers are marked, or is it marked as a route?
Actually, we didn't even talk about this. The route, the Plumas Backcountry Discovery Trail, has its own emblems that you can follow along.
Huh. Yeah, so you can just follow the little placards.
So it's not super challenging to find the right random little road.
It's well, yeah, once you get to, because officially it starts at La Porte, so you don't get the markers till you get to La Porte.
Okay.
And then, yeah, at all the junctions, they had the little Backcountry Discovery Trail placards, usually with an arrow.
Interesting.
So that part was pretty easy to find, other than the burn. Everything was burned then. It was really easy to navigate. Where we had issues was where we decided to change things up a little bit. Ultimately, I know Brent wants to go back and do that last section, just say, well, we can say we did the whole thing.
Right.
And I would go with him then, but,
We are going to do it.
Hopefully I'll be sick.
But, you know, I'm glad, you know, we kind of, by doing something different in the beginning of the trip, it kind of, made the rest of the trip, we always felt like we were trying to play catch up. So maybe some of the high points we didn't go, you know, the little spurs we didn't necessarily go look at because we were trying to make up time.
There's a lot of extra things that you can do on the trail.
And if you did the extra things, those trails would take you much longer than what they describe in a book.
Right.
We weren't going slow, but we always seemed to be challenged by the sunset. And maybe that is one issue of doing it so late in the year is you know, trying to get to camp before it got dark on short days. Made us feel a little rushed on the trail.
Even a month earlier, the weather would still be decent.
Right. And that would be a great
like
September.
An hour and a half more.
I think September would be the optimal time to do
Problem
that.
Is that, you know, like why we picked fall break because it's not a weekend trip. It's not a 3-day weekend trip. And there are no holidays from the start of school until then. So it's challenging. And, spring break is like that too. It's not the perfect time of year to be doing stuff up north.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, it worked out. We lucked out. There weren't any active storms while we were going. I think that could have made it a little more challenging if we had hit some rain.
You know? There was places on the, there's some places on the trail that had some pretty good washouts. You know, you'd be on this really easy, you know, four service road and then you'd hit, a ravine that got washed out.
Mm-hmm.
So if that and if that was during an active storm, that would have made it real challenging because it's that kind of clay dirt, you know, that gets real snotty when it gets wet
and loose, and that dirt just breaks away.
I was more concerned with the camping in the rain.
Yeah.
It.
We were tenting it, you know. We didn't really have any other shelter along with us, did we?
No, we were in a tent. Emmett hadn't been tent camping since since he was two, and you guys hadn't been tent camping in a long time. And, that was fun, though. I mean, it was fun. I think the thing for me, though, is I like trips better that where you stay at a campsite, whether you're in a tent or whatever, a day or two to kind of soak in the whole area, rather than, you know, breaking down and then resetting camp every day.
Yeah.
That, you know, after the third and fourth day, that got a little old.
That's overlanding, bro.
It's a lot of work.
I know. This is where the rooftop tents come in. but that's the one specific use I could see for the rooftop tents is setting up and breaking down every day.
Yeah. I think that'd be pretty ideal for that situation because just stop, open, and go to sleep.
As far as packing up my Jeep each day, it was a science.
Yeah.
I had everything tied down, and so nothing was going to move. And so it was a science getting it all in there.
Right.
It looked like a giant Tetris game every day when he was packing it in.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the trip, I loved it. It was a lot of fun. I would do it again. It was a blast, and it turned out really, really well for my family.
Cool. Good.
And they're excited to go again.
Good.
My wife, Rachel, she's asking, when are we going to go overlanding again?
Awesome.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
You'll have to swap out. You'll have to put an RTT on your new rack.
It's not out of the question, but I don't. No plans to go there. We actually bought a nice four-season mm-hmm. tent for that trip.
But one of the things I like about the roof boxes that I use is that you don't have to strap everything down. You know, you throw things in it and you close it, and then you're done with it. And mm-hmm. you can open and close, and you don't have to strap and bungee right. and tie.
Right.
So
I think, you know, one thing that may have, for me personally, you know, I was, if my wife had come along, it probably would have been a little easier because I was taking care of Emmett and cooking and breaking down and setting up. I think if it was, I think definitely the tandem tag team setup probably makes it a little easier.
For sure, you know, and that's what makes it tolerable when we do our trips. You know, we have our system and our each, you know, I do my thing, Danielle does her things. And, you know, the kids can go off and play in the dirt together, you know, whereas, you know, Emmett might have been playing in the dirt by himself. You don't necessarily want to have him out too far out of sight by himself. So yeah, having a group and a team makes it a little easier. Yeah. And, you know, honestly, our setup is like that. We're breaking it down. It takes like a half an hour to get it or more to get it done. But it's kind of an enjoyable little ritual sometimes, you know, if you've got it down.
I would agree. I mean, the setup and takedown turned into be a ritual.
Yeah.
I wanted to add that Emmett was a rock star on this trip. I
mean, he's a trooper for sure.
He was an awesome, you know, 4 years old out, you know, he just went rolled with the punches and he was awesome.
He loves being in the dirt.
Yeah.
Getting messy. Did he enjoy sleeping in the tent and all that?
Oh, he loves that part.
Yeah.
Both the kids are big fans of camping, and Emmett loved the tent. My wife and I have a double bag. Well, I took the double bag, so Emma slept in the same bag as me. I was worried about it being cold. And it was a great experience for Emmett and I because usually, you know, he's always kind of gravitated towards his mom. So it was the first time that he and I had spent that much time with just the two of us. So it was an amazing trip to bond with Emmett. And you know, sleeping together in the double bag, and then we had a great time, and he loved every bit of it. I had to come up with some games while we were driving. I think towards the end of the trip, his patience for being in his car seat was getting thin. But once I distracted him a little bit with making up songs and goofy animals, he was fine.
Cool.
I want to say that, you know, it was nice to be away from the technology. Stuff be off grid,
right?
You know, I have a teenager now, and teenagers are so focused on their
for sure
on their phones. And to be away, everybody was, You know, nobody was distracted. Mm-hmm. Everybody was focused on the trip and focused on following the map.
Cool.
Thoroughly enjoyed that part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we were talking earlier about doing a Death Valley trip in the spring. So that would be, Death Valley's another place where you can't connect to anything down there, too. So.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, anything else?
We in our mind, considered the tail of the trail, the brewing lair.
Ah.
So yes. That was a mandatory stop on off of Highway 70 on the way back to Reno.
The brewing lair is in Blairsden near Gray Eagle on Highway. Is it on Highway 70?
Yeah.
This weird little brewery with a nice grass area and some nice picnic tables and really good beer. And we seem to make our way there fairly often.
Yeah, if there's any way you can work that into your trip. If you're coming from out of the area and you can make it down to Gray Eagle somewhere in that trip, definitely hit the brewing lair. You won't be disappointed.
Good stuff. All right, cool, guys. Thanks for coming in. This is interesting, and I'll make the trip next time.
Yeah, thanks for planning and not showing.
Yeah, that sucked. All right, guys, we're out.
You were missed.
Let us know what you think about this show with a comment wherever you feel like commenting. YouTube, the show notes at allterrainpodcast.com, or Instagram or Facebook, or, you know, drive to the top of a hill and honk your comments out in Morse code. The All Terrain Podcast is created by me, Mike Henderson, at Reno Collective, a co-working space in Reno, Nevada. If you have something to say, look into a podcast membership where you'll get access to this studio with mics and a mixer. We also have podcasting classes and workshops taught by Chris Webster, producer of the Archaeology Podcast Network. If that's not enough, check out the Northern Nevada Podcasters Group on the Facebook. Thanks for listening.